The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Today, no thrills but some spills at the London Stadium as Joe Hart drops one. Get him on that plane, Andy Carroll scores one, and Karen Brady watches TV instead. In the build-up to the FA Cup semi-finals, Manchester United look good on the South Coast, while Tottenham don't look that good on the South Coast. The PFA Team of the Year, finally Aguero makes it, as Jan Vertonghen and Nicolas Otamendi are confirmed as the best centre-backs in the Premier League. Also, questionnaires for Allardyce, VAR at half-time in Germany, and Joey Barton's managerial debut. That, plus your questions, is today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Anirudh says, are there any updates on socks from Jonathan Wilson?
Yes, and I need to say thank you to Niall Bickersteth, who sent me seven pairs of socks. I'm not sure if it's going to complicate the rotation process or if it'll fit in. I don't actually know how many socks I have. Mm-hmm. But if it's a multiple of seven, then it's fine, because these socks are on the soles are embroidered the days of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. You know what the days of the week are. I don't have to explain that.
So much.
So this week it's fine, because I've introduced them into the rotation policy. They seem to be gelling well with the rest of the squad. Mm-hmm. But it is quite easy this week, because there's no washing, there's no notion of them kind of going missing, and they've just come straight in. But it may be that we get to a point in the future when a Sunday sock is trying to be worn on a Tuesday, and then we got to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Do some of those socks go missing in big games?
Socks go missing, don't they? I mean, that's a... It's a Sunday Express letters page from the 1980s, but I don't have a heart to throw them out, so I've got a whole bag of single socks.
The voice of EasyJet France is here. It's Philippe Auclair.
Brace.
Oh, marvellous. Simon Burnton, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Let's start then at the London Stadium. West Ham 1, Stoke 1. Philippe.
Oui.
Joe Hart, should he be in the England squad for morale reasons?
Oh, for morale, just for morale reasons.
This is the logic that he's very good for the dressing
room. For morale reasons, because it's quite difficult to make a stand for him to be in the England squad for reasons other than morale reasons. There was quite eviscerating analysis of his season by a former goalkeeper who now sometimes talks in the podcast that the name cannot be uttered in this place. Mm-hmm. And it was quite defying. I mean, so many mistakes. And this one was a really, really bad one as well, in the circumstances too. And you cannot, I think, on form, you would probably say Pope as a third keeper for England.
I would, yeah. I just think Hart becomes a distraction. I mean, the really strange thing was it wasn't just
because it would be about Joe Hart, won't it? I mean, if he doesn't play, it's going to be about him too.
Yeah.
Do you know it's his birthday today?
Oh, happy birthday, Joe.
Be kind.
But the mistake was really odd, because it wasn't just he spilled it. It was then his attempt to recover involved him sort of lamely sort of swinging a leg at it. And I actually at first didn't quite know if Crouch had scored or if he'd hooked it in his own net. Whereas if he'd gone for it with his hands, even if he hadn't quite got there before Crouch, there was a chance that he'd have blocked it. So it just seemed a very strange sort of double mistake.
According to Adam Bate at Ghost Goal, Joe Hart in 18 appearances has made as many errors this season, four, as every other English goalkeeper in the Premier League put together, 179 appearances that have led to goals, which is quite a damning statistic. At the other end, Simon, Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
Get him on that plane.
So he came on. He scored really a lovely goal, a very fine kind of measured left foot finish. And then said afterwards that he didn't feel he was playing well and that he didn't feel he took the goal well, and generally played down any kind of hype. But I don't know. He made an impact, and he makes an impact, and then he falls apart.
I mean, Jonathan has plenty to say about Andy Carroll.
After the last time I was on the podcast, I went for a lunch with two economists afterwards at a German restaurant near The Guardian.
Oh, yes.
Who should be at the next table but Andy Carroll and hordes of screaming children. It was like seeing the Pied Piper, but maybe that's not quite the right image. But it was like some kind of strange, very modern interpretation of Snow White. But he seemed to be having a great time. He seemed very happy, and the children seemed very happy.
Was it just Andy Carroll and hordes of children? Were there any other adults?
I think there were. I only noticed him as I was coming back from the toilet. So it wasn't like I was watching him throughout the lunch.
Okay.
So when I saw him, he was alone. But I assume it was sort of a collection of two or three families.
We say hordes.
Well, it's quite difficult, strikes as hundreds.
This
was a long table with a lot of children at it. It was Easter holidays, which is never a great time to go out for lunch.
No.
And so there was a lot of children from that table, and they weren't their positional discipline was lacking. They were just all over the place. It was like watching Tottenham under Jose Ardiles. It was awful. So I wasn't entirely certain which children were his and which had sort of just merged. But no, he seemed very, very cheery. Always nice to see Andy Carroll.
I'm trying to smile. Build the picture in my mind of a long-haired guy at Easter time at a long table full of people who look up to him.
Come to me, little children. Well, I mean, if it's only for morale reasons, perhaps Peter Crouch would be a better choice than Andy Carroll.
As third keeper. Why not? Stoke are down now, Simon, do we think?
Almost certainly. They require more wins in the next four games than they've had in the last 4 months, which is vanishingly unlikely. And, you know, in the first half yesterday, nothing about their body language, their demeanour and their football engendered any encouragement whatsoever. And Shaqiri had spoken a couple of weeks ago about how not even Ronaldinho could rescue this team. You know, there's bad words and unimpressive actions coming from the team. The second half, you know, the game kind of went as they would have hoped, I suppose. They killed the stadium, killed the atmosphere, scored a streaky goal on the break, and you know, needed to just murder the rest of the game from there and didn't quite hold out. But there's very little encouragement for them.
That said, I kind of expect Paul Lambert is more likely to be the Stoke manager at the start of next season than David Moyes is to be the West Ham manager at the start of next season, Philippe.
Is that so? I would have thought that David Moyes was actually almost a certainty to remain, that he actually had been given the keys, which is one thing he insisted on recruitment, which has been a huge problem, perhaps the biggest problem, well, the biggest problem, no, one of the biggest problems at least for Sporting Matters at West Ham. And the word is that he will have authority to decide who comes and who goes.
That's great news for failed former Manchester United and Everton players.
So do you think Marouane Fellaini is going to come to the London Stadium?
I think we can expect Stephen Pienaar, Paddy McNair, Donald Love, Adnan Januzaj.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a bright future for Stephen Pienaar at the London Stadium.
I'm not sure the West Ham fans want David Moyes there.
I'm not absolutely sure it's about what the West Ham fans want when it comes to West Ham.
That's a very good point. At 7:43, a message was posted on Karen Brady's Twitter account, which read, 15 minutes until my new show, Give It A Year, starts on ITV. Hope you watch it and hope you enjoy it. Some of the responses were good.
Unrepeatable, probably.
Some were unrepeatable. Here are a few, though, you know, in a measured mix. Garnet says, got to be better than that load of toss I'm watching on Sky Sports 1. At Cozy Home said, loved the show, deserved to be an hour slot. And Mickey Tricks, amongst a lot of people who then decided to give Karen Brady score updates. It's 0-0 with an hour to go, BTW. It did make me think, part of the reason, well, there are myriad reasons why I don't own Cambridge United, but if I ever came into huge amounts of money, one of the reasons I wouldn't want to buy them, because I wouldn't want to have to go to every single game. I wonder, you shouldn't be tweeting about other things that are starting at exactly the moment that your team is about to kick off. But we shouldn't be allowed a couple of games
at least acknowledge it. At least say, yeah, for those of you who aren't watching our vital relegation clash against Stoke, you might like to tune into. I mean, maybe she's contracted to tweet about it.
The first half was absolutely terrible on Monday. It may be that the players were distracted. They kind of felt, you know, I do wish I was watching ITV.
The
show lasted half an hour. Yeah. Is it coincidence that the match improved in the second half?
The show is a sort of Apprentice/Dragon's Den style idea where Karen Brady goes to look at various businesses. And one of the businesses was somebody who's made mugs and is trying to sell them for £1,000. And Karen Brady's quote was, who's going to spend thousands on mugs?
Mugs.
Which some West Ham fans said, well, her Twitter account is quite funny. The pinned tweet is a picture of her. Here it is. It says, "Make today ridiculously amazing," with Karen sitting on a chair and looking round, fully made up with a line. I mean, I would love Barry, of all people, to have a tweet much like that. But it's a great piece of advice, everybody. And if you are listening and you're feeling a bit down, just make today ridiculously ridiculously amazing. In Stoke news, Saido Berahino scored a goal. Brighton's Twitter from Monday night, the under-23s, 48 minutes, goal. Berahino receives the ball inside the penalty area and fires into the top corner to pull a goal back for the visitors, 3-1. Does this count, Simon?
No.
Okay. Manchester United played in midweek. They play Spurs in the FA Cup semi-final. Spurs played in midweek as well. Manchester United 2-0 win at Bournemouth. And actually, of all the sort of stick that I and most people in this room have given Manchester United, I thought they'd played rather well yesterday. The goals were nice.
Yeah, second half certainly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the game. I wouldn't say all of the game. I mean, the beginning of it was absolutely. I mean, it was so boring. It was unbelievable.
Were they thinking about watching? Give it a year on catch up.
But when it after the first goal in particular, yes, they were quite quite sharp. Very good Pogba. Herrera had had an excellent game as well. Nothing to be said apart from that it was job very well done indeed. And even Luke Shaw had a decent game. So, yeah, job done. They look in good nick for that. I mean, you don't know with them anyway, so it's one thing one day, it's another thing the next.
There were stories in the papers at the start of the week saying, you know, Jose is saying no one's guaranteed to be picked for the semi-final and, you know, Pogba and Sanchez.
Apart from Nemanja Matic.
Yes, I mean, I would have thought so. And, I mean, David De Gea's got a good chance. But he's going to play all the big guns, isn't he? Simon, what do you think?
You would have thought so. He did. He made six changes for the Bournemouth match, and it resulted in a significantly improved performance. Gives him a bit of latitude. Though, you know, they played terribly against West Brom, and Pogba in particular was poor, and then they played well against Bournemouth, and Pogba in particular was good. I mean, it's a funny old game, isn't it?
You look at that lineup and you try and work out what it means. So the fact Sanchez isn't there, does that mean he's guaranteed to start on Saturday because he wants to keep him fresh? Or does that mean that he's just sort of out of the equation? Mm-hmm. I mean, Lukaku didn't start, which he clearly will start on Saturday. Matic didn't start, he clearly will play. But then Pogba does start, and I'm pretty sure he'll play. So,
yeah.
I don't know what any of it means.
It's good to have you on board.
Just one thing before we move on. When we were talking about Stoke, you know, definitely down, and you know, West Brom definitely down, and Southampton probably definitely down. It's quite extraordinary. I was just looking at the table. It might be like 30 points might be enough to survive, or 31 points might be enough to survive, which I think is some kind of a record.
I'm sure that would be a record. I'm also not sure that 30 points. I think 33 might be enough, which is what Swansea have
33,
got.
33, yeah.
But I mean, surely
the record is 34, I think, for survival, something right. like that. But I think that shows how bad the bottom end of the
league
does is.
Does it? Or does it show how good the top end is? I'm not convinced. I mean, I semi-agree with Barry's point that there's a lot of dross in the Premier League this season. I'm not sure that looking at how many points they've got is actually the way of comparing that with previous seasons.
Well, we got an interesting comment below the line from Xia Guan, if I pronounced that correctly. It says, this idea that teams below the top six are particularly bad just doesn't hold up to scrutiny. He says, the first season of the Premier League, Villa were second with Daly and Atkinson up front, a load of other average British players. Norwich were third with the likes of Mark Bowen and Mark Robbins. Blackburn were fourth with Jason Wilcox, Stuart Ripley, Tim Sherwood, Mike Newell, etc. These were players who were not good enough for an England side which went out in the group stage of Euro 92 and didn't qualify for 94. The Premier League was full of British players. Has the quality of British players declined since the early 90s?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. But it's not that. It's a question of context. Because even when West Brom, Southampton, Stoke City are clubs which have got, you know, a turnover of well over £100 million pounds, mm-hmm. which is superior to, I mean, almost most teams on the continent.
I think Southampton are the 20th richest club in the world by revenue.
So and you have to judge it by that. I mean, there is a discrepancy and an imbalance, certainly. But which doesn't justify such a chasm, really, in the terms of the quality of the performances and the quality of the results. You say, yes, they've lost again. These guys have lost against the big guys, but they've lost against everybody else. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there with 24 points.
How does it change? Does it ever change?
I don't know how it changes. It's a weird phenomenon. There should be such a huge discrepancy.
Karen.
The advent of a kind of separated and unachievable top six has necessarily limited everyone else's ambitions to being, you know, the best of the second division within the Premier League. And the lower your ambitions are, the lower your achievements are likely to be.
True.
If you only want to be as good as the 8th, 9th team, then you're really not aiming to be much better than the 16th, 17th, 18th best team. And if you fall a fractionally short of your target, then you're in trouble. You've got a lot of teams who are the extent of their ambitions is to be not great.
But there's also, if you've got six teams that are noticeably better than the rest, that's 12 games each season where you don't expect to get anything, and anything you do gets a bonus. If you've got a top four, which we had for a long time, and before that a top two, it's eight games or four games. So if you're only playing a 26-game season, in effect, obviously you're going to get fewer points.
Yeah. Burnley went down in 18th on 30 points in 2009-10. That's the lowest mark in the Premier League. And did Sheffield United get 42 and go down, I think?
West Ham got 42 with Clever Brook. Then the second highest is Sunderland with 40 in 1996-7.
I stand corrected. Anyway, so we'd mentioned Manchester United. They play Spurs. Spurs have lost seven straight FA Cup semi-finals. They drew 1-1 with Brighton on Tuesday night. While we were doing our live show in Belfast, thanks everybody for coming. It was great. I hope none of you filmed any of it. what does that mean? What do we look at? The side that Spurs played, Trippier was rested, Sanchez was rested, Dier, Dembele, Ali, Alderweireld started. You sort of think Alderweireld won't play and Sanchez will play in the semi-final. But
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But that's interesting, isn't it? Because Sanchez was somebody who Mourinho targeted in the Europa League final last season.
He really
did. As being the weak link for Ajax. And yet I think Sanchez, I mean, okay, he didn't have a great game away at Arsenal, but apart from that, I think he's been pretty good this season.
Pretty exposed against City as well. I mean, I know all the Spurs were. Like a simple straight ball, which, you know, you sort of think a centre-back.
But my argument there would be that if you play a high line as Tottenham do and then don't put pressure on the ball, you're going to get done. And that's to do with positioning. And if your positioning is predicated on the assumption there will be pressing and then there is then no pressing, mm-hmm. of course you get done. I don't think that's Sanchez's fault. And he did, his pace is extraordinary. And so there was that was it on Gabriel Jesus or was it on Sterling? I can't remember. But he got back and made one incredible saving tackle.
Sterling, I think.
Was it Sterling?
I think
right.
Sterling.
Yeah. So who's going to win that semi-final? You just sort of feel, given all
Should
the chat.
Should we repeat what you said before? Yeah,
I just think United are going to win it, and I'm already sad about it.
I can't work out what Wembley means in this, because we've stopped talking about Spurs as Wembley jinx because they've only lost twice, I think, at home this season.
And that was at the beginning of the season.
Won 10 out of 18. Mm-hmm. But they're technically the away team, and obviously the divide of fans will be 50-50 rather than heavily weighted towards Spurs. So to what extent is this a home game? And I wonder if playing a neutral game at home is actually somehow more disturbing to you than just playing an away game. If you look at how many teams have lost European finals on their home ground, so Bayern in 2012, Roma in 1984, Sporting again, Cesca in the UEFA Cup final in 2005? 3-1 anyway, whichever year it was. Is there something, because if it's an away game, you're going into a difficult environment. But if it's sort of your home and yet there's other people in your home, it's like having house guests that you don't want. I never want house guests.
How long would you, when you have someone to stay, how long?
I normally go and visit my mum if that happens.
Oh, really?
It's that bad.
It can't be more than 2 days, can it?
Oh, I just hate it.
Is this the biggest game of Maurizio Pochettino's managerial career?
No, I think the biggest game was probably Juve. at Tottenham, that is. Mm-hmm. So perhaps it's the thing about Tottenham needing to win some title under Mauricio Pochettino. He's been there, this is his fourth season now. The fact that the way in which they got out of the FA Cup last year in the semis against Chelsea, a fantastic game, but which was went completely against the grain in many ways, and they played superbly, but they fell against a Chelsea team for whom everything just worked, including that incredible Matic goal, which we'll remember, don't we? And
he could do it again to them, couldn't he?
Well, who knows?
Yeah. I remember Oster Cook scoring 17 for Essex against Middlesex. Yeah. That's what I hope was.
So, most important, I think, no, it will be taken. If they fail, it will be yet again the fire at Tottenham. You know, again when in the game that really matters, especially after again the most important game was against Juve. That was the big one for me.
Harry Kane insists he's not bothered about the jokes regarding the goal he was awarded against Stoke.
Yeah,
but he's four away from Mo Salah in the race for the Golden Boot, which is the second most interesting thing left to play for.
God,
after
no,
the,
it's not. No, no, nobody cares. Well, people the race care, for sixth, shouldn't
the
care.
The race for sixth
it's
place.
Ridiculous.
Well, I know it's ridiculous.
And I think Salah, the who did Liverpool play Bournemouth on Saturday, I thought Salah had become greedy because he's thinking about that. I thought there was two occasions when he should have laid the ball off in the box and he had a shot.
Yep.
It spoils football. We should stop recording who scores goals.
Okay. Quick word on Brighton.
And we should also have. I do think that penalties should be taken out of this if you're really interested in it.
Salah's got one, Kane's got two.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a tiebreaker, I suppose.
Okay, as a tiebreaker, yeah. Perhaps, yeah.
Okay. Quick word on Brighton, Simon. Successful debut season for them in the Premier League. How many managers have done a better job than Chris Hughton, would you say, this season?
Sean Dyche, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sean Dyche is the obvious. And
Rafa Benitez.
Guardiola Benitez, yeah. But for either Huddersfield or Brighton to stay up would have been, you know, extremely remote at the start of the season. And it currently looks like both may well do so. And that's a great achievement.
I'd put Newcastle in there as well. I mean, I know sort of historically they're a bigger club, you know, bigger attendance, but the squad's not particularly good at the minute. So I think all three promoted sides have done remarkably. And that actually maybe is the evidence that it's not a particularly strong Premier League.
That the Championship is getting very, very strong in the
league. Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
But also, I think, you know, going back to what I was saying about limited ambitions, a lot of it, with squads that are kind of along the relatively mediocre, it's a question of ambition. It's a like if a squad is willing to fight for their, and expecting to fight for their place in the Premier League, and another squad doesn't expect to fight and is assuming that their place in the Premier League will continue. And there's also the fact that you carry on.
It's an impetus that you carry from season to season. I mean, it's such a wonderful achievement, I mean, to be, you know, promoted to the Premier League. And I suppose it creates a kind of togetherness and an impetus and dynamics that is superior to a team which is just there to survive, as you just said. Yeah, that makes
sense. On the subject of Newcastle, I interviewed Matt Ritchie the other day, and he wanted to stress that he didn't pie off Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang when there was a sort of a handshake gate when he was Aubameyang went for the handshake and he walked past him and high-fived Iose Perez, but he was sort of lost in the moment. Important clarification there from Matt Ritchie, and Twitter went mad with that. It's very exciting. In 25 years of the Premier League, there have only been two seasons in which all three promoted clubs have stayed up. Fulham, Bolton and Blackburn survived in 2002. A decade later, QPR, Norwich and Swansea stayed up 2012. So there we are. So well done to those guys. That'll do for part one. Part two, we will look ahead to the other FA Cup semi-final and discuss the PFA Team of the Year. Welcome back to part two of Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The other FA Cup semi-final, Chelsea-Southampton, is on Sunday. Both these teams are in action tonight. Chelsea go to Burnley. Southampton go to Leicester. Antonio Conte claims he has a harder job than Sean Dyche. Here are his quotes. Dyche is doing an important job, a great job this season, but if you start the season fighting to avoid the relegation zone, it's more simple. Also, if you have a small budget because you can count on the team that in the past qualified to play again in the league, it's more difficult when you have to prepare the transfer market to win something because only one team wins.
What? He did say that.
Hmm.
Well.
Well, to put it all in perspective, I mean, my heart's broken, and I'm very sad for Conte. He's struggling on in such difficult circumstances.
He has done a fantastic job, though, in that context. Can't really argue.
But they have stayed up quite comfortably.
They have. They have done well.
Yeah, Conte, I mean, definitely. I don't think all these problems there.
He does have a bit of a point that it is about expectation, you know. So
can we remind us well? I mean, perhaps Antonio Conte, that I think Sean Dyche, apart from losing two very important players, Michael Keane and Gray, by the way, didn't work out too well for them. Also lost his keeper, who was supposedly one of the best keepers in the Premier League, Tom Heaton, only to find Nick Pope. And then lost his playmaker, Stephen Defoe, who had been absolutely outstanding in the first half of the season. So I really don't know what Antonio Conte is talking about here.
Philippe, would you like Burnley to pip Arsenal for sixth place?
a part of me would quite like it, would quite enjoy it, yes.
The best thing about it would be that I probably would go to the Europa League qualifier in July, whereas no one's going to Burnley for it, so it would get me an extra game.
Yes, I mean, and that draw could be, well, like, you could go to the away game, could be anywhere, some random, you know, it could be the Faroe Islands. You go to that.
Tórshavn.
Yeah. Why not?
Most frightening descent on an airport anywhere in the world.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's pretty bad. When the weather is Faroese, shall we say, it's fairly lively.
So Chelsea, we presume, what, will rest everyone for this trip to Burnley tonight?
Who will they rest? Olivier Giroud, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Who will they rest? I don't think
I get the feeling that none of us are that excited about this Burnley-Chelsea game tonight.
Well, didn't even realise it was happening, if I'm being honest. Was that in the running order? No, you told me about that.
Well, I mean, I think there might be a presumption.
I know it does say in the running order. Yeah, I just thought it was a mistake. I didn't realise they were actually
playing
on Thursday.
So we'll see Pedro. We'll see Morata. We'll see Drinkwater. We'll see Cahill. I don't know.
Bakayoko, is he fit?
Well, perhaps.
Is he fit?
I mean, I think.
Is he fit to play for Chelsea? Or is he fit in the purely physical sense?
I think listeners will be amazed to know that we have a running order. Personally, Mark Thompson got in touch to say, I have feel an urgent need to reply to my comments on Monday where I said I felt Olivier Giroud seems less attractive in a Chelsea shirt than in an Arsenal shirt. He says, I think it's the Chelsea shirt this season. It lacks definition in the shoulders and makes a couple of the players look relatively puny.
I hadn't thought of that, but I quite like the Chelsea shirt this season. Very, very simple, very straightforward. I think it's a good shirt.
Okay, but I just feel. I mean, I don't know. I just don't. I haven't.
Puny is not an adjective I would have ever thought of associating with Olivier Giroud. I must say.
No.
I'm also wondering what other shirts have to give definition to the shoulders.
What do you think? There's like bits of card in the Arsenal.
I mean, are there shoulder pads?
I hope so. Sort of 80s throwback.
Like Dallas line.
Yeah, that would be marvellous, wouldn't it? Southampton go to Leicester. They're third bottom, 5 points adrift of Swansea, who they play in the penultimate game of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they're only, the one thing is that given what is happening at Leicester again, I should say, they might have a chance to do something there. Very odd what's happening at Leicester.
What's happening at Leicester?
Well, it's a bit the same thing. You do get the feeling from the outside that this dressing room is not exactly pulling together and that there are a few people in there who are quite willing to leak stories or be a bit difficult, shall we say? As soon as they're not happy or they're not in the team or whatever, you know, talking about the rotation policy of the manager. Because it happened against under Ranieri, it happened with Shakespeare, it's happening with Puel. Despite the fact that they were 18th the day before he was named manager of the team, and they're complaining. It's a strange atmosphere, to say the least.
Do you think winning the league was the worst possible thing for that side?
Well, not really. I wouldn't say that. It was the best possible thing to happen to that side. On the other hand, it's sometimes a bit difficult to live with it afterwards. Survive with it.
I think I can see why their squad are a bit like, you know, once, you know, another season, we're not going to win the league again. What's the point of carrying on? Do we give Southampton any chance against Chelsea in the FA Cup, Jonathan?
Yeah, some chance. Just because Chelsea haven't been that convincing this season. Yeah, I mean, neither has Southampton, obviously, but the cup's a cup, isn't it? Mark Hughes has got a great cup record, and I mean, of course, Chelsea should win, but.
The way the league match between them went must make it less likely that Southampton win. The fact that they were in such a strong position, in total command of the game, and failed to see it out.
Well, yes, But on the other hand, they did show that for an hour they could be a significantly better side than Chelsea.
And even then they can't beat them.
Well, but, you know, if you just concentrate for 8 minutes rather than letting in three goals in 8 minutes.
So they can do a Wigan, basically. Go down and go to the final of the cup.
Why not? That would be nice, wouldn't it? The PFA team of the year.
Oh,
De Gea, Walker, Otamendi, Vertonghen, Alonso, Silva, Eriksen, De Bruyne, Salah, Kane, Aguero. Five City players, including Aguero, who makes the team for the first time ever.
But that's the player on the left wing.
Well, you know.
That's a nonsense, isn't it?
It's absolute nonsense.
Vertonghen and Otamendi, the best centre-backs in the Premier League?
No.
Well, Vertonghen, fair enough, but Otamendi, I mean...
I was making a list of centre-backs who I thought...
Has completed 2,902 passes this season, which is nearly 200 more than anybody else. Anyone want to guess who's second?
On the pass list,
yeah.
It's always Azpilicueta.
It's not Azpilicueta. He's sixth, though.
Okay. Matic.
Matic is fourth.
Okay.
You're quite good at this. Surprisingly
Xhaka.
So.
Xhaka.
Granit Xhaka.
There you go. This takes us back to...
I do think that there is, though, you know, there's a caveat with the golden boot and penalties. There shouldn't be a caveat for this and the Xhaka pass. Because I've seen plenty of Xhaka passes.
Well,
I don't want to ever
pass,
see another Xhaka
sort of,
pass
you know, 3 yards
anymore.
To his right to John Stones, normally.
Yes. But,
do you want to boast about the restaurant in Belfast? Is that what you're coming on to?
I was about to come on to
Oh,
that.
Gosh. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was a... That,
I mean, genuinely was staggering.
It was absolutely staggering. We actually thought that it had been prepared, that there had been a running order for that, actually. And should we say what happened?
19 of the 22 players to start the 1987 Cup Final.
Mm.
Plus 9 of the 11 Crystal Palace players who started the 1990.
Yeah. I mean, I probably can't remember them now.
Not every presenter of the Garden Pod would have been able to do that.
Surely there should be some more Liverpool players in the team.
Well, surely there should be a Fernandinho in there. That's okay. Just the most scandalous thing ever. You put five players from Manchester City and there's no Fernandinho, who is the... Would you say he's number one or number two on the list for Guardiola? Or Ederson, certainly.
Well, because they don't have another player in that position. And
who can play in so many positions?
I think it's pretty obvious that City's main target this summer in terms of bringing players in will be somebody to take some of the load off Fernandinho, who I think, does he turn 33 this year, I think?
33, yeah.
Would Delph have a shout above Alonso, presumably? Alonso's been decent.
Well, if you're talking at left back, I would say Robertson.
Yeah.
There's been quite a few good left backs this season, I think.
Ashley Young has had a superb season. I mean, it's a wing back, perhaps, but. And at centre half, I think you can look beyond the top six. I think Alfie Mawson has had a fantastic season with Swansea. Nathan Ake has been terrific with Bournemouth. I mean, why should it be always the players who are from the top six teams? I mean, if you do well, I would say, I would argue that, you know, even Lukas Fabianski should get a look in for, you know, it's been wonderful for Swansea.
So is the conclusion that footballers don't understand football?
No.
It seems that the players of the top goal scorers are all a bit silly.
Okay.
And if you're going to have a team of the year, at least kind of say, you know, when you're picking it, you don't just pick three midfielders, pick a holding midfielder. And then two players to play alongside him. Otherwise, it just looks ridiculous. What have you done? You just picked 11 players. It's not a teamer in any sense.
Essentially, all markers of individual success should be abandoned. Goal scoring charts. Individual
awards. It's a radical concept,
teams of the
but
year.
Football is a team game.
Yeah.
And the Ballon d'Or? I mean, I have no interest in the Ballon d'Or at all.
No, but, I mean, I know this is Philippe's magazine and kind of.
Yeah.
But I think the only value in an individual award is to recognise a player who's had an exceptional season but maybe hasn't won the trophies because he's been playing at a lower level. So that's why Ginola winning in 99, I don't think it's a scandal. Everybody now seems to, 20 years later, seems to have decided it was. It had to go to one of the treble winners. Well, yeah, they won loads else that season. Ginola had a great season for a team that didn't win anything. And so that's where I think it has some kind of value in recognising that kind of contribution.
Which is also why I think that Florian Albert is one of the great Ballon d'Ors, but in 1967, I think.
Tell us about him.
I'm one of the most glorious ball players, playmakers. It's of the second great Hungarian team of the 60s.
The third great Hungarian
team. Okay.
1938. 54,
I was thinking post-war, yeah. I mean, an absolutely magnificent player. And who was, Mazopust as well, was recognised by the Ballon d'Or. Unfortunately, the way it's gone, it is now really embodying the switch to from collective sport to a sport in which people, individuals, happen to play. So, yes. Even though I'm from France Football, I'm in slight agreement with Jonathan on this one.
In the Football League, League One, Wigan edged closer to promotion after a 1-0 win over Oxford. Third place Shrewsbury lost to playoff-chasing Charlton Athletic. Joey Barton is the new manager of Fleetwood Town. He'll take over one day after his betting ban ends on June the 1st. What do we think about...
What were the odds on Joey Barton becoming manager? Sorry.
He had spoken before, like several years ago, of his ambitions to get into management. And his ambitions are extraordinarily high, as I guess Joey Barton's ambitions often are. His intention is to be the best coach in the world, and he sees no reason why he shouldn't be. So
he have his badges, does he yet?
Not yet.
Yeah, I think. Not all of them yet. But I think there's been a long-term ambition to make this move. But the move has been extremely easy, given how his last 2 years have gone.
I sort of think he might do quite a good job. I'm not basing this on anything, apart from I know him a little bit,
but you can sort of imagine him being sort of a figure who would give a huge boost to a dressing room initially, and then some catastrophic, cataclysmic falling out. Yeah, sort of De Canio-style model. If his ban's over, and he's got every right to seek employment. He seems bright and articulate, so he may do very well. I think there's other former players who have done their badges and have got them ready who may wonder why Barton seems to get things handed to him.
Yeah, who?
Who might think that? Hmm. Lots of people who have their badges. I just think doing your badges is a thing you should do as a...
Yeah, I mean, have you done your badges?
Me? No, I have no intention of being a football manager.
See, I did levels 1 and 2, and it's incredibly boring, and then it gets very sort of work heavy, and at that lower level, and so not coming, this is nowhere near the UEFA B license, it was a lot like learning to drive, in the sense that
can't do that either.
Well, okay, I'll talk to Simon. You
can't drive either, can you?
Excuse me? No, I can't.
Okay, you and me then.
Here we go. Right, it's a bit like learning to drive, where the driving lessons sort of teach you ostensibly how to drive, but they don't really teach you how to drive. And I really felt the same about the coaching badges, in the sense that certainly at the start of them, you're learning these things that you would never ever do on a football pitch.
But Such as?
Just the methods that they tell you to talk to people, the work you've got to do, the sessions were not sessions that you would, I imagine, put on for a professional football team. Now, I'm sure that changes as you get higher up, and these guys can start at level 3, I think. But even still, I think you're probably right that you need to do the badges, but I wouldn't say it necessarily defines whether you'd be any good or not, and I don't know how much it would help.
Sure, but if the badges have any validity, people should have to do them. If the badges aren't actually teaching the right things, that's a different issue.
No, I agree with that.
Do you know that? I'm mentioning it, probably will go out. On our way back from Belfast, the guy who was sitting next to me was, I think, the manager of Armour City, I think, football club, and was preparing his UEFA badges.
Really?
Yes, and he was there with all these exercises, taking notes and everything. This is 9v9, 5v5, and so forth.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You were sneezing all over him.
Yep. And I probably actually passed my bug on to him, which he passed on to his whole team. So you know what to expect.
Better against Armagh at the weekend, is what we're saying.
Yeah, and it's definitely worth clarifying that for anybody who has done UEFA B and A and all those licences, they might be listening to me going, you have no idea what you're talking about. League 2, Accrington Stanley promoted. Brilliant story, this. Incredible run of form. In 2018, John Coleman's side were ninth in the table after losing on Boxing Day at Carlisle. Since that defeat, they've won 16 out of 19 games in League 2. Their only defeat by Crawley in January. A 1-1 draw at Barnet in February and a 1-1 draw against Exeter on Saturday. First time they've ever been promoted to League 1. And they don't have, you know, budget-wise, they're nowhere near the top of League 2. I mean, they're punching well above their weight. That's a brilliant story. And that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll... look ahead to the Premier League fixtures, talk about VAR in Germany, and Instagram handles on the back of Inter Milan shirts.
Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Thomas asks this question, Philippe. With Manchester City likely to dominate for the next decade, should the Premier League should the Premier League introduce a relegation playoff like they have in Germany to spice up the end of the season?
I can't see really the relationship between the two.
It's just anything to keep the season going until the
speaking
end.
Speaking as the fan of a team that was relegated in a playoff in 1987 on away goals, I can tell you it's pretty fucking annoying. Especially given the away goals only came into play after extra time. So Sunderland lost 3-2 at Gillingham.
Oh.
Then beat them 3-2 at home and then went to extra time. We scored. They scored.
I also think there is something, much as I absolutely love the playoffs to go up, which are not a punishment but reward, I do hate the idea of a playoff being a punishment at the end of a league season. Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean, but there is part of me now thinking I'd really like there to be, you know, those games where everything is resting on. They're not necessarily the best games of football, but just the
well,
tension.
The playoffs tend to be, the championship playoffs tend to be some of the best, actually, thrilling games of the season.
But the tension is so, you know, you could just, it's palpable. And I think, you want that from as many games as football as you can possibly have.
What I mean is that, in a way, a playoff for a team that's in the bottom three, it's a kind of, it's almost like giving a reward for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the playoff to go up, it's to reward for almost making it.
There's pretty much every season, no, most seasons, there's a point with several games to go where you look at the table and you think, okay, well, if Team A wins this game 3-0 and that one 1-0 and Team B draws both their matches, then they might finish on the same number of points and identical goal difference, and then they'd have to play off the last relegation spot. And wouldn't that be amazing? And that would be amazing, but in a kind of totally unique, less contrived way.
Well, I'd like it. at the Premier League games at the weekend, Liverpool go to West Brom on Saturday. Roma are charging the 5,000 Liverpool fans £73 a ticket. And the Champions League, Atletico Madrid fans, interestingly, charging Arsenal fans £79 a ticket for the Europa League semi-final. Is this an absolute disgrace, or
It's in keeping. I wouldn't know for Serie A, but in terms of La Liga, it's in keeping with the ticketing price, with the price of tickets in La Liga, which are unbelievably expensive. They are. And it's a bit of a funny thing as well, because away, in Spain, there's no real tradition of away fans.
I'm not surprised if it's £79.
No. Well, you know, the prices are absolutely atrocious. I think Sid has talked about that a few times, but there's this idea that because there are a few socio club and things like that, that the prices are not there. But it's £79. This said, semi-final, no?
Well, I was going to say, to play devil's advocate, you know, if you want to go to the most expensive theatre production, you know, a ticket for Hamilton costs £200.
What?
You know, if you want to go to...
Yeah, but you wouldn't be going to see that 45 times a season, would you?
But you're not going to be in the Champions League semi-final 45 times.
Well, okay, yeah. But you are also paying £50 a game, £40 a game, whatever, for the other matches. So yeah.
I'm just wondering if ticket prices should go up depending on, you know, the World Cup final is more expensive than a pre-season friendly for Cambridge.
Well,
against
World Cup tickets are extraordinarily expensive anyway. I'm bewildered to people. I find myself constantly bewildered by modern life, full stop. But more specifically, if I didn't do this job, I can't believe I'd be paying to go and watch football regularly now. It's just unbelievable prices. Loads of it's rubbish.
What other parts of modern life do you find bewildering?
Oh, technology, transport, people, the weather. What's happened to the weather? Like, we went to Belfast, it was like 6 degrees, we came back, it was 26. What happened to spring? Do you remember springs? They were good.
Watford play Palace on Saturday, Arsenal West Ham Sunday. Brian says, should the top six be referred to as the top five now?
What if Burnley makes it? So I don't know.
I don't think you gain entry or lose entry to the top six in a single season. So if Arsenal come seventh this year, I would still make them a top six team unless they again fail to come top
six. How many
six.
Seasons until you lose your top six rights?
Well, I guess as soon as it stops being a surprise that you're not there, then you're not among them.
Okay. Burnley are in the race.
It doesn't really mean anything, does it?
No. But I mean, nothing means anything really.
No, I mean, if you say top four, yeah, okay, which gives you the right to take part in the Champions League, the new format, directly group phase, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's fine.
But I think isn't the point.
You could say top five because the fifth, yes, you go to the Europa League.
No, but
it's not a question of qualification. It's a question of there being a certain number of teams that are above and different to the remainder of the Premier League.
And at the start of the Premier League season, you look at the six and you say, actually, these six could all win the league. This could be the most exciting title race of all time. They could all be within a shot of winning as we kick off the last game of the season. You need to buy six tellies and watch them all. And it never quite turns out that way. So Burnley in that race for sixth place go to Stoke, who desperately need the points. Swansea travel to Manchester City. On Monday, this is from Robbie, Barry said he hoped Swansea would stay up as he likes Carlos Carvalho. Who would your top four teams be if it was based purely on how much you like the managers?
Spurs would be there.
I think United might be in relegation trouble.
Brighton. I like Carl Robinson.
Yeah, Brighton.
Oxford would be up there then.
I would
say, may Jonathan forgive me, but I would say Newcastle.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Stoke would be in big trouble. Stoke would have made it.
I think Southampton might be an even bigger trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I meant. I meant Southampton when I said Stoke. That's even worse.
To be clear, you have nothing against Paul Lambert.
I like Paul Lambert. Okay. I was still thinking about Mark Hughes.
How was your holiday, Simon? Do you think you feel you're back in the swing of things?
Yeah, I've been away.
Oh, that's okay.
So I'm
there's so much football, Simon. There's so much to know. You can't keep across everything.
This league ends on Thursday now. So yeah. Well,
Simon
right.
Van Winkle.
Yes. No, I was aware that Mark Hughes was no longer at Stoke and was at Southampton. I am just stupid.
On Monday, Everton play Newcastle. Gareth Southgate's going to have a look at Jonjo Shelvey because I think everyone else has pointed out that he's quite good at football.
He's very good at football.
Would you start him for England, Philippe?
I don't know if I would start him, but given the lack of players with this kind of passing ability, I would certainly consider him. And given, you would have thought, you know, Wilshere would, given the run of games he'd had with Arsenal, and not doing too badly at all. But again, physical prime, so off we go. But yes, why not?
Well, I guess it depends what you think a squad should be. Should it be essentially two teams so that you could have an easy replacement if somebody in your first team gets injured? Or should it be something that gives you different options? And if you want an option to play really lovely, precise long balls over the top, maybe for Jamie Vardy to run onto, then Shelvey absolutely should be in the conversation.
Especially when you take, I was thinking of the group phase here, when you're going to play against teams, I mean, two of them, you would imagine.
We'll sit very deep.
We'll sit very deep,
very
so
different
then
type of game.
Like Shelvey will be very useful, yes.
I mean, the thing I'd say against him is it is very late in the day. There won't be a friendly to try it out before the squad's selected. So I think if he were going to look at Shelvey properly, he probably should have done it a couple of months ago.
Should he have done it?
Yeah, well, maybe, because Shelvey, I thought, was excellent in the game when Newcastle beat Manchester United.
He was, yeah.
I mean, you always remember the games you're at more than games you see on telly, and he really impressed me that day. He played well against Arsenal on Sunday, mm-hmm. I thought, as well. And, those balls for Dwight Gayle. Dwight Gayle and Vardy are similar types of player. So it makes sense in that sense.
Everton have sent a survey to a group of supporters asking them to rate manager Sam Allardyce's performance on a scale of 0 to 10. It's part of an exercise with a fan panel designed to discover how connected they feel to the club. Fans are asked to rate the statement, quote, "I have a high level of trust in the current manager and coaching staff, e.g. making the right decisions to get the best out of the team," where 0 is completely disagree and 10 is completely agree. What do we think of this? Some people say this is a huge insult to Sam. Whatever you think of him, how dare the club do this?
I find that attitude slightly baffling. I think if a club genuinely wants to know what his fans think and wants to act upon that,
just listen to a phone-in.
then it seems a way of testing the temperature of the water that would be more accurate than listening to a phone-in. Where the fans should have a say in who the manager is, that's that direct.
I think it would be more interesting, I think the kind of questions it should be asked to fans rate from 1 to 10 would be things like, you think our tickets are too expensive, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Who should play at left back?
Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable question to ask. I think it would be strange if, you know, any enormous decisions were made as a result of the answers they get back. But I would also expect that Allardyce has, after the career he's had, a thick enough hide to, you know, get over whatever the result is. It's only opinion, after all. So I don't see the harm in the question. I'm not totally sure why they're asking it, but I don't see the harm in it.
Like, what's, I mean, what, you know, they'll get a lot of fours out of ten. What do they decide to do then?
I'd be amazed if they got a lot of fours.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, there's a great place on the Guardian website called Below the Line where you can put your comments about the podcast. If you want to suggest any questionnaire questions and answer them, we'll obviously we will take them very seriously.
I remember Wenger once being asked, imagine the football of the 21st century, and saying, a time will come when fans will be asked to vote online for what the team should be next Sunday.
Could happen.
And well, they tried that at Ipswich, didn't they?
Yeah. Yep.
I like the bit on our survey when it says neither agree or disagree. You know, who are these people just hovering completely? No, or I don't know. It's a great answer in a survey question.
Well, I mean, most of the questions I'm asked, the answer is I don't know. Not you.
Yeah, I think that's fair. No, on a long survey, why would I care about everything? I'd rather have that option than have to make something up.
I think if you asked a football fan for an opinion about football, they're unlikely to tick the neither agree nor disagree option.
Well, okay, if I was asked about sort of concourse catering at the Stadium of Light, I would neither disagree nor disagree with anything because I never use it. So,
yeah.
Okay.
But that's about food.
There we are. Well, also, I mean, I need to work on my my little bit of routine in my stand-up show about surveys. No, that's what I learned from that. In the Championship, big weekend, playoff chasing Millwall, host automatic hopefuls Fulham tomorrow evening. Massive game that. Wolves only need a draw at 20th place. Bolton to win the title. Cardiff host Nottingham Forest. Presumably your fate can be sealed, Jonathan. Can it this weekend?
Yeah, I presume so, yeah. I mean, it's been sealed for a long time, let's be honest. But it's so sealed that I was asked this week to write a reaction to Sunderland going down.
Really?
Which I believe will go up on Monday. So
the obituary you've been asked to write already. Did anybody enjoy the VAR between Mainz and Freiburg, where the ref blew for half time, the Freiburg players went off, and then he called them back in because they'd conceded a penalty while they were in the dressing room? I mean, that's wonderful, isn't it, Simon?
You know, there are problems with VAR that you don't conceive when you originally think about the system, that only the reality of using it in football matches exposes. And I guess this is one of them. What the referee said afterwards was that at halftime, we can pull the game back if something's happened just before halftime. But at full time, there's no possibility of doing that. And it seems strange to me.
Is that right?
Is that so?
That's what the referee said afterwards. So it seems strange to me that an incident that happens in the 45th minute can be or is necessarily treated differently under VAR.
That's fascinating. So it's like a game consists of two halves and a pause, basically. That the halftime is part of the game.
Yeah, essentially, yes.
Well, we learn every day, don't we?
That seems wrong.
Yeah, it does seem wrong. If an identical incident happened in the 93rd minute, there would have been no penalty, and that seems a little strange.
So presumably refs then are advised to be cautious about the blowing of the final whistle if there has been an incident in the build-up to the final whistle.
I don't know. So the referee spoke to the media afterwards. He said that they have dealt in training with issues of this sort happening at this kind of time. I'd be surprised if they blow the final whistle when they think they've made all the decisions they need to make, and that's the end of the match. I'd be surprised if they've been warned to bear anything particular in mind at that point.
That's more of modern life that confuses me.
Interesting if the ref did speak to the press as well, because see that would never happen here, would it? We'd never get anyone.
It happens everywhere. Everywhere it happens elsewhere. And I think one of the model arrangement for that is in MLS, where they have, there's a panel of journalists who get together at the end of, they've been designated by their colleagues, and they come up with a list of three questions which they want to ask the referee. They write them down, they pass them on to whoever is the, you know, comes director at the club which is organizing the game, which is passed on to the referee, and then the referee comes and answers the three questions. It's after every single game. They have the right to do so.
Is it on a scale of 0 to 10? Would you...
Camilo, I would have it on a scale of 0 to 10. I have it on 10. Can it happen here? Yes. Absolutely.
Well, it would be great. And it would be great if the refs were mic'd up for VAR
and
as well.
And they found out,
be,
I think it's only been in place for 2 seasons or 2 years in MLS. And the number of controversies, refereeing controversies, has just got... Well, there are none, basically, because everything is explained.
Camilo says, would VAR work better if every player wore a GoPro?
I would say no. I'm going to go with no.
Headers would be
partly
worse.
Because, headers would be worse. Yeah. Partly because the referee would then have to review 25 different angles.
Well, you could also have GoPros on the subs warming up, you know?
Yeah.
But then we could have GoPros. Fans could have GoPros.
You'd have to have a whole array of GoPros covering every angle from it. Because things don't always happen in front of them.
Producer Jonathan makes a good point, is that they could cover it with their hand, like they cover their mouth. So when they're talking to someone, they've got one hand over their mouth and one over the GoPro. And all the players would have to do it, and then something they could do something really nefarious, and none of us would know.
What should be said is that there is a new satellite has been launched called the Galileo, which will enable the GPS within 2 centimetres, not only in terms of placement on a horizontal plane, so your position of your feet or wherever you are, but also in height. So you could actually determine which part of the body, I'm not joking, it's the Galileo satellite. It will be, it is launched and it will work from next autumn.
And do you think that's the best possible use for this technology?
I was about to say
no,
the same thing.
I think it's shit.
But are they really going to put the first thing they're going
to do? In terms of technology, it will be available. So you'll be able not only to see exactly where you are in a sort of kind of flat plan, but also in terms of height. So you could say the shoulder was 1 centimetre off.
So we'd known if... You know, as opposed to like trying to fix some important humanitarian crisis, we would be able to judge whether Harry Kane had scored at Stoke.
Absolutely, if a hair.
Oh, that's important.
Yeah, it's important.
Bayern Munich put 6 past Leverkusen to reach the German Cup final. They'll face Eintracht Frankfurt, who beat Schalke 1-0 last night.
Yes, and who is the manager of Eintracht Frankfurt?
That Kovac chap, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's off to...
Bayern Munich.
There you go. Spanish champions-elect Barcelona extended their unbeaten run to 40 league games. They were reduced to 10 men and held to a 2-2 draw at Celta Vigo. They rested
and
several key players.
Nobody seems to care about the fact that Barcelona might well finish the season unbeaten in Spain. Nobody cares about it.
Yeah, Sid was saying that. It's not. There's not a big Invincibles debate.
Because of what happened in the Champions League. I think there would be. They would talk about it far more. Which was how much they've been shocked by that.
Okay, well, they rested several key players. They've got Sevilla in the Copa del Rey final on Saturday. So what, they win the double and they go unbeaten. They've still had a bad season.
Yep, apparently.
Which just shows generally across Europe how the league is being diminished.
Yep.
The Champions League is everything.
Mark says, with Iniesta going to China for a fee and 2 million bottles of wine, is this the future of transfers? Bale to Manchester United for 50 million and a farm in Cheshire. Mark said he's decided to join an unnamed Chinese Super League club after promises he would sell around 2 million bottles of wine there. Bodega Iniesta started in 2010, sells wines from the tiny region of Fuentealbia, which is where Spain... where Iniesta was born, with Corazon Loco, his most famous label. So that's
nice. And I
think
you can stay there if you wish. Oh. I think they've got a couple of rooms.
That's nice.
I think it was his father's wish. His father had always dreamed of being a winemaker.
Oh, really?
And Iniesta, when sufficiently moneyed, made his dream come true. So it has that kind of a kind of romantic element to it.
It wasn't his like dying wish. You just don't want your dad to, as he's dying, say, oh, by the way, start a very successful wine business. And then you're sort of lumber. Oh, I've got to play football, Dad.
Yeah, but
busy.
No, what's that, Dad? What?
Matthew says, not sure if this has been discussed on the pod before. Does the panel agree that the Spanish side Loja CD have the greatest football kit of all time?
No, it's awful. Dreadful.
Do you've seen this one? It's they're sponsored, I believe, by presumably prawns.
Well, and that's exactly why it's a bad idea. It's just sponsorship nonsense. It's like that team who had ham the other, just pick a colour. Don't pick produce.
It's a white shirt with a photo of 5 prawns, 4 horizontal and 1 laying across the top.
But where does it end?
So Spain have a bit of a recent tradition of these kind of local produce photo shirts. which we've never done here. There was a team that had an octopus tentacle, a Galician team that had an octopus tentacle.
What about the Hamon?
Right, there was the one that was like ham. There's a team that had a giant broccoli floret on their shirt.
It's all very food-based.
A few years ago. So I think the prawn team, they're sponsored by a frozen food company, so it's perhaps more direct sponsorship generally.
Has anybody asked Roy Keane what he thought about it?
I'm sure Roy Keane's opinion on this would be entirely sane, which is it's awful. Northampton don't have pictures of shoes on their shirt. Sunderland don't have pictures of
course. Be careful what you say.
I think I'm right in saying Sunderland's third kit this season is charcoal grey to reflect the old mine, which is Stadium of Light.
The sky built above the Stadium of Light.
the heart, the souls of every Sunderland fan.
Yeah, I think that some of them obviously look disgusting, the ham one in particular. But if they're kind of abstract, like the broccoli one, I thought the broccoli one was not bad. And the octopus tentacle looked really good. I thought that was a particularly successful
away kit. Once you're tying a team's kit to its sponsor, where does it end? But they'll be naming stadiums after sponsors
the
next.
The octopus tentacle wasn't anything to do with it. I think the sponsor was Estrella Galicia at the time. It was a beer company. And in fact, the same team's home shirt was like a pint of beer, yellow and bubbly. But the away kit just expressed the local people's love of octopus in a very beautiful and straightforward way.
If it's been like that from the 19th century, I'm prepared to accept it grudgingly.
It would have been had the technology been available to make octopus.
You can do a representation. Look, I mean, we have a unicorn on our coat of arms. Like, we had the technology to draw a unicorn from, I don't know, the 12th century or something.
Yeah.
If you can draw a unicorn, you can draw an octopus. I mean, an octopus exists. You can copy it. A unicorn, you've got to make it up.
In Serie A, Juventus' advantage at the top of the table was cut to 4 points as they were held to a surprise 1-1 draw by struggling Crotone. Second place, Napoli beat Udinese 4-2. Roma moved up to third after ending a run of four Serie A games without victory by beating Genoa 2-1. Yes, Philippe?
Well, so could the race for the title be still on?
Absolutely.
Because next week, I think it is next week, it's on Sunday, it's the big clash between Juve and Napoli.
Marvellous. Hear what Paolo Bandini thinks on Monday, potentially. Lazio moved up to fourth by coming back from two goals down, beating Fiorentina 4-3. Both sides had a man sent off in the first 15 minutes. Marco Sportiello, the Fiorentina goalkeeper early on, for handling a cross outside the box. Lazio lost a man. Alessandro Murgia dismissed for a last man professional foul. Jordan Veretout completed his hat-trick for Fiorentina with 54 minutes gone. But goals from Felipe Anderson and Luis Alberto turned it round for Lazio. Inter Milan are fifth. They beat Calgary 4-0. Furore over the Instagram handles replacing names on shirts that weren't then actually worn, apparently. But Inter Milan put the...
Why don't we put pictures of their favourite food on there?
It's a nice idea.
An avocado toast.
You'd think that one Inter Milan player isn't on Instagram. You'd hope that one of them has resisted and then would just have nothing. Would just have his number and everyone would celebrate that one. Fiorentina fans, by the way, this is from Mo, 1976, trolled Gigi Buffon after a penalty kick was awarded against their team on Sunday. They started chanting insensitive, insensitive at Gigi, which hopefully will carry him around until he says that he was being ridiculous.
Just when you think football's gone, something just pulls you back in. Something purely beautiful like that.
In the semi-final of the Coupe de France, who's in it, Philippe?
Who was in it?
Yeah.
You had the semi-final between two third division teams, Les Herbiers and Chambly, and Les Herbiers qualified. And then PSG, to everybody's surprise, beat Caen, Stade Malherbe de Caen, 3-1 yesterday night. So we'll have a final between PSG and Les Herbiers.
And who's going to win that?
That's really difficult to tell. And I was having a look at recent results in the French Cup, in the French Cups, I should say. And in fact, in 2015, 2016 and 2017, PSG won both the French Cup and the League Cup. So they're en route for another treble, which, again, will be of no value whatsoever. And nobody will care too much about it because it's all about the Champions League, as Jonathan said it.
For the first time since March 2017, Bas Dost, who played for Holland against England, has retired since from international football.
Only 28.
He's a big old unit. Not as big as the lad who came on to replace him for Holland Wout Weghorst, says producer Jonathan. Anyway, Bas Dost controlled the ball before scoring this weekend, ending a run of 45 first-time finishes. I presume it'd be quite a few headers.
I would imagine also quite a few first touches were wrong ones. That's why they don't appear in the list.
Yes, he scored 68 goals for Sporting, of which 64 were his first touch. 27 headed goals, 25 first touch tap-ins, 12 penalties. So obviously the penalties, as we've established on today's pod, don't count. Finally, Chairman Kev says, we were talking about that amazing Manchester City Etisalat video and, you know, on Monday and other sort of corporate tie-ins. He says, here in China, the Premier League live site sssports.com uses Manchester United players to flog mattresses. It involves David De Gea, Anthony Martial and Michael Carrick, arms folded with the mattress behind them. Then David De Gea in full goalkeeping kit, lying down and napping on it. Last season, Wayne Rooney did the voiceover for the slogan, redefining sleep. So, isn't that marvellous?
Does explain something about his performances this season.
Yeah. They've redefined. They have redefined sleep. That'll do for today. Jonathan, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Thanks.
Not a problem. I was coming anyway. Simon, thanks. Lovely to see you.
Pleasure.
Philippe, merci.
De rien.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.